Turning our attention now to bioblitzing. Do you know what bioblitzing is? Well, you're going to find out because we're going to be talking about it today with a couple of guests. We'll be exploring Wisconsin's biodiversity a bit with Jeff Potter, Special Projects Coordinator with the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin. Jeff, great to have you back.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
And also Lauren Ayers. Lauren coordinates citizen science projects for the DNR of Wisconsin. And Lauren, pleasure to have you with us as well.
Good morning, Larry.
Appreciate it. Let's appreciate having you both here, as a matter of fact. If you'd like to join in, by the way, in our conversation as we move along, I hope you will. Maybe you have some questions about bioblitzing, maybe about how you might get involved. Maybe you've got some questions about our natural areas of Wisconsin. We'd certainly love to hear those questions or comments as well. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And you can email us, the email address, talk@wpr.org. Well, first, what are bioblitzes? Who wants to take – Jeff, yeah, do you want to start?
I can answer that question. Well, bioblitzes started out on the East Coast probably about 20 years ago, and the idea was really to get the idea of biodiversity more in the public mind. I think we all grew up learning about the ecosystem, and what we didn't really learn was this term biodiversity, and that's really the connection between all the life on the planet, all the different species. And one of the best explanations for biodiversity I ever heard in terms of, well, why should I care about that, which is, you know, a classic question on the environment. We have so many other national concerns. The idea is, you know, if nature and our environment, if biodiversity is an airplane that you're flying at, you know, 35,000 feet on this airplane, all the nuts and bolts and the pieces of aluminum and the jet engines and the fuel, all those are the different species of this planet that we have. Okay. And so the question for biodiversity and why it's important is, if those nuts and bolts are all species, how many can we lose before the plane crashes? You know, if you're looking out the window and you see a couple of bolts fall off the wing, you may think, well, that's not a problem. But then you start seeing more and more bolts falling here and there, and you start to get worried. And so biodiversity as a concept was, you know, a new way for people to look at the life on the planet and our relationship with it. And they wanted to create an opportunity for the public to go out and try to learn how to measure that. And so when conservation scientists and field ecologists go out on a daily basis, they're looking at the health of different populations, you know, whether it's endangered species like a Karner blue butterfly or even things like the common squirrel. There was a lot of controversy around the deer population.
Sure.
You know, all of these things are being measured by scientists out in the field. And the chance for the public to go out and spend some time in the field, experiencing that process for all these different species was developed really as a chance to help people understand whether you're in downtown Madison or Milwaukee or you're out on a state park or state natural area. It's not just people that are there, and it's not just the easy to see things like the cardinals or the or the Canada geese or any of those things. It's all of the tiny little species, the lichen, the moss. All of those things are connected, and all of those things are the biodiversity that we connect with. So they started sort of as, let's take the public out to one piece of land. We're doing state natural areas. And in 12 hours, let's have as many scientists and volunteers from the public go out and find as many species as they can in that state natural area. So it's kind of a scavenger hunt. It's a race, you know, in 12 hours to find as many species as we can. We assume we'll find, you know, maybe 800 or 900 species at each site within the day.
Ah, and Lauren, you coordinate these projects. Tell us about that.
Well, with the Department of Natural Resources, I actually work with quite a diversity of inventory and monitoring projects that citizens can get involved in. These particular bioblitzes, Jeff is the coordinator of, and we're helping by finding scientists and specialists that can participate and interact with the public. And there are a lot of the projects, or a lot of the individuals that will be present at these bioblitzes that also have long-term science projects that volunteers are involved in. So there is continuing opportunities for involvement even after these bioblitzes.
Even after they're over. Well, Frank in Eau Claire has a question for you guys, so let's go to Frank and find out what's on his mind. Hi, Frank.
And for years, I was on the Eau Claire County Parks and Forest Advisory Committee, and one of our citizens suggested that we do a natural area. And then in that discussion, trying to define what that is. And then somebody said, well, it should be a wilderness area. So what is the difference between the two?
Well, state natural areas, it's part of the thing we're trying to promote through these BioBlitzes, are publicly protected lands that are monitored or designated by the state, especially through the DNR. And there's about 600 state natural areas in Wisconsin. And the idea is that they are properties that are set aside solely to protect the biodiversity of the state, the natural heritage. So we have state parks, which are for recreation and enjoyment. Of course, they also provide protection for wildlife. And we have state forests that are logged and other things, but so, you know, protected for the state as a whole. But state natural areas are a little different. They're set aside specifically to help protect the state's, it's sort of like a living library, is okay. What people say, of the state's biodiversity. There's 600. The smallest one is 1 acre near Ripon, but we have some that are over 8,000 acres. Most of them are on publicly held lands. So a lot of people have probably visited a state natural area. Parfrey's Glen in Devil's Lake is one of the most popular ones, and they may not have even known that they were there. But the designation really means that the state is protecting that, monitoring that, and there's essentially a higher level of monitoring and awareness of that biodiversity that's there.
Now, how is that different from what you might call a wilderness area then? Any comment on that, Lauren?
Wilderness is usually a formal designation. It depends on who creates the definition, what agency or what organization, but it usually implies remote and pristine areas. And we actually have a few designated wilderness areas.
I was just going to ask you that. Where are wilderness areas? Somewhere in northern Wisconsin, I assume.
Well, I think there's one right in Newport State Park, which is the home of the first BioBlitz.
Well, that's a state natural area. Yeah. So the all of our BioBlitzes are in state natural areas. Basically, I don't know if the state of Wisconsin actually has a wilderness designation like the federal government does, but the state natural areas in many ways serve that same purpose. And they're not all remote, but many of them are. And as I mentioned, they're all just about all of them are open for public visitation, but they're primarily used for wildlife, for providing habitat, breeding and feeding grounds, things like that. And they're also used for science, about 50 different research projects, either through the UW system or outside universities. We have folks from University of South Dakota that'll be at our Newport State Park BioBlitz this weekend. People come from all over the country to do research there to look at this as well. So they are like a library in the sense that they're a place where we can try to protect the species that we have, monitor them, and collect data that we can then use, you know, year after year, decade after decade.
So from Frank's perspective, we'd probably be more thinking of natural areas versus wilderness areas. As I think you're right, a wilderness area is something that's designated by the federal government, and I'm not sure that we have a wilderness. I mean, even the Shawamigan National Forest is considered a wilderness area.
That's right. And our state natural areas are designated through the Senate and Assembly and through the DNR.
Okay.
And there are some that are on private land as well. Of the 600-plus state natural areas we have, I think about 50 of those are on private land. And even a handful are on private property owned by an individual. There's a few people whose homes, even though they're property, they may only have about 30 or 40 acres. Because of the nature of the property they own, the rarity of certain plants that are found there or plant communities or ospreys or something are breeding there, they can actually apply for a designation there as well. So it's really about the wildlife and the species determining which is the best spot to put a state natural area.
All right. Frank, I hope that helps.
I think so. I think the natural areas are a learning situation, a classroom, and the wilderness areas aren't tread upon that much.
Yeah,
and some of the state natural areas, they do discourage public involvement or visitation, but essentially all of them are open and they allow hunting, recreation. What they don't allow would be recreational use that would have a negative impact on the purpose of protecting it, you know, whether it's trampling certain plants or hunting certain wildlife.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Frank.
Fine. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And take another call. Josh in Washburn, we turn to you. Hi, Josh.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, a lot of it has actually been reclassified as the Gaylord Nelson Wilderness Area. by the federal government. We do have a wilderness area here.
So we do have one.
Yeah, and that's a federal designation rather than a state one. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
I appreciate that reminder. I knew that. I should have remembered it, but I didn't. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Before we take more calls, let's go. We've got three locations, do we not, for the BioBlitzes this year?
That's right. We've got three locations. These are all free events, free and open to the public. If you are interested or live in the area, we've got the first one coming up on June 26th. It's at Europe Bay Woods State Natural Area, but the easiest way to remember, it's part of Newport State Park.
So up in
Door County, Newport State Park this weekend.
That's a cool park.
It's a beautiful spot. If you haven't been there or are going to be up in Door County and would like to do something outdoorsy, the event's all day. It runs 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. We'll have basically field trips throughout the day on a host of different species. We'll have folks going out for birds early in the morning, but we'll have folks looking at plants, wildflowers, trees, mammals. We've got a bat trip the night before. On all of these activities are really citizen friendly. You don't have to have a lot of experience. You don't have to be a scientist, but we do have 25 terrific scientists from the UW, from the DNR, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and then a lot of really great nonprofit and skilled amateur naturalists that are going to be there as well. And they're all going to be guided trips.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. It's really a chance for people to learn a little bit more about what conservation scientists do every day.
And now, so we had the Door County then.
That's this weekend.
That's this weekend. But then there's two more.
Two more. And the other two state natural areas are at Cedarburg Bog, which is north of Milwaukee in Ozaukee County, near Saukville. And that is on Saturday, July 17th. Again, that'll run all day, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. And then on Saturday, July 24th, we'll be up at Dwight's Point, which is in the city of Superior. It's part of the city of Superior Forest, which I just learned is the largest municipal forest in the country.
Oh, cool. I did not know that.
Yeah, and this is, I've traveled all over the Great Lakes. Larry, you and I have talked about Great Lakes issues before, Canada and otherwise. And I will tell you that this Dwight's Point, which is part of the city of Superior, is one of the most beautiful spots I've ever been to on the Great Lakes, and I didn't even know about it until last fall. And we're going to have each event is going to have all the science excursions and the field trips and opportunity to work side by side with some of the state's best ecologists. But we're also going to have a kids activity area. We're going to have some special speakers and presentations. We've got folks coming up to Door County from California that are going to show some films. They're going to be making a film about the event. They're going to talk about sustainability. Also, Door County, the Peninsula Art School is going to be there doing a public art sculpture with things that they find in nature. Mm-hmm. Cedarburg Bog, we're going to have bog walks all day, and the Milwaukee Public Museum's involved. We've also got a wildlife rehabilitator who's going to bring some birds of prey that they've been working with that she's going to do a talk with. And up in Superior on July 24th, we're going to have the L.L. Smith research vessel from the University of Wisconsin-Superior. So we're going to have boat rides out and around Dwight's Point. And then also we're going to be talking about surveying the waters and the shoreline there to try to find how many species are also in the aquatic environment at Dwight's Point.
Sounds really interesting. Jeff Potter, Special Projects Coordinator with the Natural Resources Foundation in Wisconsin, one of our guests. Lauren Ayers, the other. He coordinates citizen science projects for the DNR of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. BioBlitzing on our minds here and on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk about the natural areas of the state with Jeff Potter and Lauren Ayers. Thank you so much for listening in. If you have a question or a comment, I hope you'll join us. The number 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Tom in Green Bay is up next, so let's go to Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi. In regards to wilderness areas, those are federal.
Right.
All of your national forests are mandated to have wilderness areas. These are areas where there is no cut, no fire management, anything. They're only for walking or horseback. There are some very large tracks on the Nicolet portion of the Nicolet-Chequambigan. You've got the headwaters where you get the pine, the popo, and the peshtigo coming out of. You've got the blackjack, and you've got the Whisker Lake area up in the northeast.
There you have it.
Sounds like an expert. We'd love to get him up to Newport this weekend. If he's in Green Bay, it's about an hour-long drive. We'd love to have him up there surveying for species at Newport State Park.
Yeah, that'd be great. Tom, if you can make it, what do you do? You just show up, or can you register in advance, or what do you do?
Yeah, you'll find maps and registration details online. It's a free event. You don't have to register, but we're encouraging people to pre-register. And, of course, it'll give you all the information about the day's schedule, things you need to bring, dress for the weather, all of these things. They're rain or shine events. But if you visit our website for the Natural Resources Foundation, that's wisconservation.org, wisconservation.org. Or you could just Google Wisconsin NRF, and there's a link on the homepage. We've got information about each one of the sites this weekend, Door County, and then July 17th, Cedarburg Bog, July 24th, up in Superior.
All right. Thanks again, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Lauren, have you had some comments? We've done these in the past. What kinds of response do you get from people?
It's generally very favorable. I mean, it's once people get there, they generally very much enjoy the opportunity to work with professionals and dig in closer and have somebody that can help them identify species, to learn the different research techniques that scientists use. It's all around a really positive event. And we find that the same thing is true with our long-term volunteers that work on various, standing projects.
Sure.
Some of them are incredibly devoted to the projects and spend hundreds of hours a year donating their time and expertise to the work. And I don't know. I think just everybody likes to get outdoors, and if they mm-hmm. have a guide that is also a specialist in the taxonomic field or in the topic area that they're working, so much the better.
Oh, absolutely. Now, is there a kind of a research component to this? I mean, are you keeping track of from 1 year to the next or 5 years apart or whatever? Maybe, Jeff, you can comment first and then have Lauren chime in too.
Yeah, it's a question a lot of people ask about is what do you do with the data? And all the species that we see and record from all different aspects of biology will be recorded and they'll be kept in the database. You do find a lot of things that you expect to find. You see your cardinals and you see the trees and things that you expect to see in Wisconsin. But occasionally we find a rare species that wasn't expected to be found. And we did do some bioblitzes around the state in 2004 and found some rare damselflies in the Northwoods that we didn't expect. And those ended up being written up and presented at conferences. And the scientists, it piqued their professional curiosity. So a lot of these scientists are donating their time, their expertise, and yet they're also very serious about the science. So we're going to have a field lab set up with microscopes and other things. We're going to be using all of the sampling and data and species collection techniques that you would see on a much larger, more complicated project at the state or federal level. So, as Lauren mentioned, there's these opportunities through our BioBlitzes just to go out and sort of dip your foot in the water for the day.
Yeah, sure.
But the DNR actually runs these citizen science projects with a lot of volunteers around the state day after day, and that's really Lauren's job. And so folks that are interested, for example, in bat monitoring, it's a chance to learn a little bit about the program, and then if they're interested, maybe they'll sign up to do something greater. And we just have such a beautiful state. We're so fortunate to live here. I mean, people live here because of the wilderness. That's one of the great offerings of the state of Wisconsin. And citizen science and these kind of events, it's an opportunity to, I think, enhance that understanding of what makes this such a great place to live, to go out and experience that. And it's a little bit like learning to ride a bike or read. Mm-hmm. I think when I go out with some of these biologists, I feel illiterate. They look at the landscape and they read it like a beautiful poem or something, and I'm illiterate in that regard. I don't know all these Latin names and things like that, but they really bring it alive for me. And just that little bit of knowledge is a powerful thing. And of course, in the case of the work that Lauren's doing, it's also a way to contribute and give something back to the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, and Lauren, we have a lot. You might comment. We have a lot of people involved across the state in a whole variety of of these sorts of activities, as you were alluding to.
Right. Citizen science isn't new by any means. The concept of the BioBlitz is a little bit newer, but citizen science projects have been going on for over 100 years. The Christmas bird count is in its 106th or so year. The breeding bird survey has been going on since the early 60s. The National Weather Service, weather monitoring stations. There's a long list of very old examples of projects that have been around for decades. But recently, there's been an incredible upsurge in the number of projects that are available to citizens to work on. And, you know, we kind of use citizens and volunteers, the term interchangeably. Mm-hmm. And essentially what we mean when we're talking about citizen science or citizen-based monitoring projects is a volunteer or a network of volunteers that perform or manage research-related tasks in a scientific field. So quite often they're involved in the field component of wildlife or water monitoring, plant surveys, invasive species surveys, those sort of things. And so it's it's a product, I guess, of the times with tremendous budget cuts, but then also there's a lot of increasing interest in these other species, a much, much expanded interest in managing and understanding more species than ever. And that's where these groups help out. And it's actually not the department that the DNR that coordinates or starts most of these projects. A lot of them are started by the individual that's interested, and they see an opening. There's nobody.
Give me an example of one, like
somebody doing butterfly monitoring.
Okay.
There's dozens of examples throughout Wisconsin of individuals that have started something. Another one would be a good example would be salamander monitoring, which is a brand new project of the last few years. We don't have a national or a state level salamander monitoring project. Well, Randy Korb has started one, and he works to gather volunteers slowly and meticulously, train them, provide them the methodology on how to do the work, and then they go forth and start finding sites to work on. And so there are many, many projects like that. Some are more well-established, like some of our water monitoring programs, like Water Action Volunteers or the lakes monitoring projects. So they're more structured, and they tend to provide data, or they'll feed data directly to the departments or the decision makers. Others are a little bit more educational. And so like the BioBlitzes, Jeff has described it as one-third scientific endeavor, one-third education, and one-third festival, I think is the way he put it. And so, as he mentioned, it's a good way to get an introduction, and we'll actually have booths there that will provide information on a lot of the projects that we can get involved or that volunteers could get involved in. I think there's, at last count, I had over 80 projects that know of that people could do. And if they can't find a fit within those, we can make one up for them.
There's a lot of species that need to be monitored and counted. And, you know, I've been on a bat field trip. The foundation hosts about 100 field trips throughout the year. And, you know, a lot of the citizen-based monitoring or citizen science projects, the long-term ones that Lauren's referring to, are really species-specific, you know, where you're like the Christmas bird count, you're only counting birds. And a lot of people are just doing it at their feeder, for example. You don't have to necessarily go out and put on the boots and take the binoculars and things like that to contribute. And the bat monitoring for me was really interesting because there's five species of bat in Wisconsin. It's not like birds where we have hundreds and hundreds of them. I'm sorry, there's seven. Lauren is correcting me. I apologize. I was swatting mosquitoes during that part of the presentation. But there are, it's a manageable number. But you say, well, how am I going to find bats? You know, I don't see them. I wouldn't know how to identify them. A lot of them might look alike. And on this trip, and the people that participate in the monitoring program, they actually learn to use these ultrasound detectors. And so the bats send out a signal, a click kind of, a voice. And so they train you how to use these little devices that sort of look like a really old cell phone from the 1980s or something. And you record the information that way. And it's something that people can just get a little bit of science on. And it opens up this whole world about how well, not only about bats, but how we record data for some of these species that are very hard to find. Even salamanders, I learned recently that one of the ways we're going to collect information on salamanders is rather than going out in the woods and turning over a bunch of old stumps and logs, you know, to look for them, you can go out a week in advance and you can put out plywood boards, actually. And the salamanders will find them on their own. And so that rather than disturbing the natural homes or habitats of these salamanders, you can make some artificial ones that you'll
temporary,
doesn't hurt the salamander. And then you can go to those sites. You'll know exactly where to look. You lift them up, identify the species, and do a quick count before they scurry away and move on to the next one. So there's a lot of these real simple techniques that once you hear about them and you go out on a field trip or have an experience with an expert, you all of a sudden say, well, this is really cool. I could kind of do this on my own, and I can do it on my own time. And we try to make a lot of this stuff kid-friendly as well. There's some schools and nature centers around the state that have been participating in these programs. And then, of course, at our BioBlitzes, we're going to be trying real hard to have kids' activities and other things. So it's the science isn't as daunting as much as the discovery.
Oh, it sounds like a lot of fun and very interesting. Phil in Delafield. Let's turn to you now. Hi, Phil. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I tuned in a little while back, and I missed some information. I heard about the BioBlitzes you're having and that there's going to be one at Cedarburg Bog. I worked out there for 10 years a little while back, and I'd like to become involved. Is there any way I can do that?
Great. Thanks for the call. Yeah, Phil. The BioBlitz at Cedarburg Bog will be on Saturday, July 17th.
Mm-hmm.
It'll run all day, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., and people can come for part of the day or stay the whole day if they want. And if you go to the Natural Resources Foundation website, you can click on a link on the homepage. It'll give you all you need to know about the event, and you can click to pre-register. Now, you don't have to pre-register. You can just show up, but if you pre-register, that'll allow us to send you a little more information in advance. You'll have maps and some other details. And that website is wisconservation.org, or we just say WisConservation, our own brand of conservation, wisconservation.org.
Okay, great. It would be nice to be back out at the bog where I spent quite a few years. I think I could probably help point some things out to people.
We'd love to have you out there. Sounds
All right.
great.
Thank
All
you.
Right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Lauren, Phil wanted to get involved on a regular basis at the bog or someplace else. Pretty easy to do that, too.
It is. If you use the internet again and do a search on CBM in Wisconsin, citizen-based monitoring in Wisconsin, you'll come to a website where we list many, many projects. There are several other good hub websites, too. Environmental Education in Wisconsin, eeinwisconsin.org, is another good one. UW Extension has the water action sites. And then there's also, of course, some of the brand new DNR officially sponsored projects, Game Bird Brood Observation Survey for the Public, the Deer Observations, and then the Fall Hunter Wildlife Surveys can be found on the DNR site. And there it would probably work best to just go to the DNR homepage and then search for online survey. So again, with the citizen-based monitoring program, we probably have the most comprehensive list of projects, and we have a who's who directory, who's who of citizen-based monitoring, and that lists projects by county, by topic, and by name. That is at, just again, Google citizen-based monitoring in Wisconsin, and it'll come up.
Or even, I think, CBM Wisconsin, right, will bring up the website.
Okay. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments or maybe your experiences. It was kind of nice to hear from Phil as somebody who's worked and been involved in some citizen-based research and work with the natural environment of our state, the natural areas of our state. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. You know, we were talking before the show, and I think, you know, here with the DNR and with the University of Wisconsin and some other agencies, we have a lot of biologists, not as many as we'd like, perhaps, that are out there working. And, You know, the question might come up, what does a biologist do all day long? What does a biologist do all day long?
Lauren's probably better to answer that than I am, but I think it's a great question because so much of the debate on the news and, you know, even around the water cooler at work is really, when it comes to the environment, we're really talking about politics probably more than we're talking about science. So I'll let Lauren tell you what he does on a typical day may not be a perfect example, but some of our wildlife ecologists.
Yeah, there's a very large diversity of occupations underneath that generic title, biologist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it doesn't even necessarily mean wildlife biologist, mm-hmm. which I think is what some people assume. But with the Department of Natural Resources, a wildlife biologist works either in the management field, mm-hmm. Doing some of our standard wildlife surveys and property-based management. And a lot of education, too, they also mm-hmm. work on. And then there are more the research biologists or those that specialize in certain taxonomic groups and the collection and provision of information. And so that's, you know, from the department angle. But there's biologists in numerous other agencies. There's biologists that work for the universities, and there's even biologists that work in the private sector. So what does a biologist do on any given day? Well, I can tell you, I think I spend most of mine on email. But seriously, we try to, you know, there's a lot of public contact involved with any mm-hmm. of these natural resource jobs. And mm-hmm. so one of the things that we're trying to do with the citizen-based monitoring program in the Department of Natural Resources is recognize the wide array of individuals that are involved in the monitoring of natural resources that aren't, you know, quote-unquote professionals, paid right. and trained individuals.
Right.
There is room for a lot of involvement, and that's what we're trying to do with our portion of the program, is to do a better job of recognizing them, utilizing some of the resources that they're providing, assisting financially and with technical support, doing a lot more to converse and align priorities, and also share information about various properties so that it's, you know, we can improve management.
You know, the interesting thing is, one of the interesting things for me is that you probably have a lot of citizens out there who aren't formally degreed in the area of biology, but through years of working on this have probably become pretty expert in some areas.
There's a lot of individuals like that. In fact, some of, you know, I know, for instance, individual in central Wisconsin, Gene Jacobs, that has 36 years of research information on red-shouldered hawks.
Wow.
And 20-some years on saw-whet owls. He runs a research station in central Wisconsin just outside Stevens Point. No formal education, but on-the-job training is huge. And there's numerous examples like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we're going to have quite a few of those folks that are going to be participating in our BioBlitzes. The one that first came to mind for me was Door County at our event this weekend at Newport State Park is Roy Lucas. I don't know if you've had Roy on your show before, but mm-hmm. Roy's training, I think, is in physics, and yeah. I know he worked on atomic weapons things at some point in the 50s. But he's just a legend up in Door County and really a treasure for the whole state, you know, 80-plus years old now, I think. And he's just a master of really all of the wildlife up in Door County, but especially the bird populations. And his wife is an expert on the mushrooms and the fungus and other things that you find there as well. And, you know, I think a lot of that comes from, well, personal passion, but also staying in one place. I think that yeah. Wisconsin, especially as you move sort of north of Stevens Point, Portage, those areas, you start to see people that grew up on the land, they stay in the area, and their understanding of their local biodiversity and native community is pretty keen, and they have a lot to offer those of us that have degrees and those of us that are looking to discover more about why things are happening to our environment as a whole.
Yeah. Well, John in Menominee has a question for you, so let's go to John. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
How are we doing today?
Just great. What's on your mind?
Well, I live up here on Lake Menominee in Menominee.
Yeah.
And it's a real problem. And I know it's, you know, people monitor it and know about it, but and you know, it's great everybody's monitoring everything. But at some point it has to go from monitoring something and knowing there's a problem and then doing something about it.
It's a great comment. I couldn't agree more. And I certainly feel like I hear some frustration there. And I want to say you are absolutely not alone. I work for a nonprofit, but I work with folks at the DNR and at the federal level day in and day out. And a lot of them feel that same concern. And I think it goes back to that point I was making earlier, that a lot of the conversations that we have in the public sphere about the environment does not focus on the science. It focuses on the politics. And I think that what is important is that we don't forget the science. And the monitoring alone will not save the species. And we know that we can record the decline of species day after day, and it won't necessarily make it better. It's like watching the stock ticker or your retirement accounts go down. Just watching it is not, you're going to have to, at some point, you're going to have to move your money, or you're going to have to leave the country, or you're going to have to do something.
Do something.
Yeah, you're going to have to work a little bit longer. You're going to have to do something. And this is the big question for the country. And, you know, when you look at the United States as a whole, and you do public polling on political issues, you know, what should we do something about? National security is at the top of the list. Healthcare, education, the economy, war in Afghanistan and Iraq. These things all come in the public mind before the environment. And even the oil spill, we have been monitoring the spilling of hundreds of thousands of gallons of oil every day down in the Gulf, and people want something to be done. But that doesn't make all these other problems and priorities go away that we have as well. And I think the point is well taken for a state like Wisconsin, that we can't necessarily do something about some of the national challenges we have, but we can do something locally. And I would encourage anyone out there that's feeling that frustration on the environment to come out and find other people that feel that same way and decide what they can do. For some people, like Gene, who's passionate about owls and raptors, he decided that he wanted to collect that data and report it. He wanted to make sure that people understood that something was happening. But I'm sure he's also a passionate advocate in his local city council, that he's setting aside public lands. I think the State Natural Area Program, it should be noted that these designations are doing something. They are saying, this is one way we can protect these species. Now, it may not be statewide. It may be only on, you know, 400 acres somewhere, but that is one place where that species will be protected. In fact, the program started in the 1950s for state natural areas. And, you know, just a handful of them were named. Cedarburg Bog was actually the second one that was named. But 77 were added last year. And, you know, the state natural areas make up just, I think it's just less than 1% of all the acreage of the state. I think it's less than 0.1%. But they are home to 90% of our endangered or threatened plant species and more than 75% of our endangered animals and wildlife. So state natural areas are one way we can do that. And down in Madison, we've got beautiful lakes. They're in the same trouble that they're having up in Menominee. And it has been monitored, but there has to be that public will. People have to decide they're going to maybe vote a certain way, or they're going to operate their own lives, their homes, their businesses in a way that has a smaller impact. There are things we can do as an individual, and then there's things we can do, obviously, collectively as a community.
Yeah. And the component we're talking about is where the natural resource agencies and the individuals are doing the monitoring to provide good information to those that can make the decisions about how to manage lakes. And I know lakes are a tricky one because they cross a lot of jurisdictional boundaries in terms of who has authority over or manage them. And, you know, they're a product of their watershed too. And so there's a lot of issues going on that any one organization, be it a citizen lake association or an agency, doesn't have full control of. So the frustration around lake management can be especially acute. But again, it's the role of our programs and of the citizen groups to provide good, sound, valuable data so that those decisions can be well-informed.
Well, I'll tell you what, John, thanks again for calling. And we've got BioBlitz is coming up this coming weekend, 3 days from now, as a matter of fact. You guys will be in Newport Beach State Park in Door County. And then we'll be going to Cedarburg Bog in mid-July.
July 17th.
And then Superior?
On July 24th.
July 24th.
And all that information's online at wisconservation.org, or you could just Google NRF Wisconsin.
And find out how you can get involved. All those are free, open to the public. You're going to learn a lot, and you're going to have a lot of fun. And Lauren and Jeff, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks
for the opportunity.
Been great. Jeff Potter is a special project coordinator with the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin. Lauren Ayers coordinates citizen science projects for the DNR here in Wisconsin. Great to have them with us. And well, I'm sure we'll be talking more about BioBlitzes and about our state natural areas. But coming up, we're going to be talking with you a little bit about climate change because Doug Stotz is with us. He's the conservation ecologist, ornithologist at the Field Museum in Chicago, and they have a new climate change exhibit opening Friday. And we'll talk about climate change, and we'll talk about that exhibit with him and take your questions and calls next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.